Welcome to iGrad College Admin Podcast, bringing you interviews with key trendsetters in financial aid and financial literacy with your host, Chris Albin.
Hi, this is Chris Albin with another installment of our Financial Aid and Financial Literacy Podcast. With me on this session is Mike Fife, who is the lead financial sophistication coordinator at Champlain College. Mike formerly worked as a one-on-one debt counselor at the Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Vermont, which is where he originally established his kind of financial literacy passion and background. So we're going to talk a little bit about the good things that they're doing over at Champlain College. In fact, one of the original things that kind of drew my attention to what they were doing is a lot of the media coverage that they were getting. So I kind of started thinking that that's a great way to build organizational support for initiatives at your campus. A lot of the college administrators that I speak with really have trouble getting that organizational support to carry out their initiatives. So we'll talk a little bit about that, but first I want to say hi. Mike, how are you doing?
Pretty good, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. And I think the first thing that we want to do is start out talking just give everyone a background of the LEAD program and kind of your particular role in that program.
Sure. So the LEAD program is a non-credit-bearing program that we have at Champlain. It's pretty distinctive to Champlain College. It's a life skills curriculum. It is a required portion of students' experience here at Champlain, but it isn't for credit. So all students participate in LEAD. If they don't participate, they can't register for classes their next semester. So there are three pieces of LEAD. There's lifelong career management, there's engaged citizenship, and then finally financial sophistication, which is the portion that I run. And each year students have different requirements in each section that they have to fulfill. My portion of that requirement is, of course, the financial sophistication piece, and each year, students have one requirement, so they can participate in any of a series of events or workshops to fulfill that requirement. They can go to a workshop on budgeting. They can go to a workshop on repaying their student loans, understanding employee benefits. There's, I think, 11 different workshops and events that we offer, and two of those are online, nine of those are live. So it's a pretty robust program at this point, but it's been pretty popular with the students. What we find is that requirement is really helpful in getting them into the classroom, and once they're there, the students are really appreciative of the education that we're supplying.
Okay. And you're saying it's a requirement and, you know, they cannot register for classes for the next year if they haven't met that requirement. So how many kind of workshops sessions do they have to take, and how often is it per semester, per year, and for how many years?
So it's one workshop per year in the first 3 years of their Champlain College experience. So I'll just walk you through the financial sophistication piece for simplicity. So their freshman year, all incoming students fill out a financial sophistication assessment, and we use the Jumpstart 2008 survey for that. Their freshman year, they also have a second requirement of attending one workshop. Sophomore year, they have one financial sophistication workshop to attend, as well as their junior year. And then the senior year, all students retake that assessment. They basically take it as a post-test, which hopefully will let us measure a little bit of our impact. I don't have data for that yet, as we just started 2.5 years ago. So we'll have that in a couple of years, which will be pretty exciting.
I like that a lot. I think more schools need to install some kind of measuring component to kind of not just validate what they're doing, but also kind of constantly striving to improve. So I think that's a very good feature.
And I think with that measuring, I think, as you were saying before, with the generating media support, having some reports and having some measurement and evaluation can really help you get a lot of good media and get yourself out there.
Okay, yeah, I definitely want to talk about that in a second. But just to kind of follow up on this program, one of the things that you said is there's one component that's a few of them that are online workshops. Now, I noticed that one of the requirements in the online workshops is the students have to submit a reflective essay, which I really liked because typically in the online modules and courses, you don't see as much of the type essay submissions because, you know, obviously someone has to grade them usually. So our first question I had was, are those graded by someone or they just have to submit a certain amount of words?
Those are graded by me, yes.
Oh.
So, you know, part of the advantage of developing this program myself is that in my mind, it's got some biases to it. One of those is that I agree with you that with a lot of online education, I like to have a reflective piece with that just to make sure that the students are really thinking and really getting the message. I worry that with some online, especially financial literacy education, there's this ability to click through the workshops. That's actually something that I developed when I was doing bankruptcy counseling. You know, I was working with an adult population which had some pretty high stakes when you're dealing with bankruptcy, and I found out that a lot of my clients who had done online bankruptcy counseling really had no idea what was going on. They had just clicked through everything. So I really wanted, when developing this curriculum, to develop a confirmation strategy.
Okay. Now, these are done on a kind of pass-fail basis, right? Or are they actually assigned letter grades?
Exactly.
So do you, just out of curiosity, do you ever have students that seem like they're just kind of putting words on there because they figure that, you know, it's pass-fail, like as long as they do enough not to fail, that they're okay? Or do you think 100% of the students submit pretty good essays?
Oh, we definitely have students, especially with the online courses, who are skating by. But when you're making a requirement of all students to participate, I think that's going to happen. For the most part, though, I've gotten some pretty good responses. A lot of the online workshops have been done by students who are abroad, and I think they've found that tracking their money and thinking about their budget when they're abroad has been really applicable to their trip. They can't work while they're abroad because they're on student visas, and I think that's been pretty successful.
Okay. Now, the whole aspect of having this required and putting registration holds on students that don't complete the requirements, is that something that was kind of already instilled before you got to the program, or have you had a hand in that at all? Because I know this is one challenge that a lot of schools have is, you know, they have to just kind of incentivize and promote these types of initiatives because they don't have the support to make something mandatory.
Yeah, the LEAD program has always been a required program, and it started a couple years before I got here. We were very lucky in that the president of the college, President Finney, he came up with the idea of the LEAD program and making it required. And, you know, when the president decides that something's going to happen, it's a lot easier to make happen. So that's been great for me. I didn't really have a hand in that. I've more of been responsible for developing the options so that the students can fulfill this in a way that really benefits them.
Okay. So I guess if we have to take one lesson from that, it's get the president of the institution on your side. And anything that you want will, you know, that'll happen, I guess. So let's talk about
It does help to have those higher administrative types on your side. And I think, again, as you were saying, you know, generating some positive media can really help get that support.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was going. I've seen a lot of different stories that were put out. There's actually a website that you guys use called pitchengine.com, and I don't know, there might be multiple sites that you guys are using, but that's the one particular one that I've noticed that seems to have led to a lot of the media coverage that you've received, and the media coverage has been great. Can you talk a little bit about the media coverage you've gotten and the results from that?
Yeah, you've caught me a little bit off guard. I didn't know we were using Pitch Engine. But we have a really great media person, Steve Meese, whose full-time job is to kind of generate media for and buzz for initiatives that are going on at Champlain College. So I've been able to work with him on a pretty consistent basis, keeping him updated of what we're doing. He's done a very good job reaching out to, I think, local media has been very successful. We recently put on a large event, and we're lucky enough to have the local television news come and cover that for us. The other thing that I think has helped is I've been able to work with community partners on a pretty consistent basis for both funding and to come in as presenters for our students. And I think working with those community partners, creating a buzz is I don't want to say easy, but it goes hand in hand with it.
And I'm kind of thinking that what you're saying is a lot of these community partners are a lot of times generating their own media coverage based on doing these kind of philanthropic efforts with your institution.
Yeah, in some ways they're creating the buzz. I think it's also a pretty easy sell of a story. You know, the fact that People's United Bank is sponsoring a program for 200 students up at Champlain College, and we're in a pretty small community, is a nice story. I think financial literacy is a pretty popular topic in the media today, and I think with an effort and a press release, you can generate a lot more than folks might think.
And if you wouldn't mind, can you try and rattle off a couple other community partners that have helped you guys out?
I'm always happy to rattle off community partners. So we've worked with People's United Bank. They've been a good sponsor for us for some of our larger events. I've worked with Champlain Housing Trust, which is a local housing agency that's done a lot of financial literacy work in both the local and the national community. We've worked with the Center for Financial Literacy, which is also out of Champlain College, who do outreach for education, financial literacy education in high schools. I've worked with Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, which is our retirement servicer. They've come in and done some programming for us. New England Federal Credit Union has helped out with some programming. Most of these organizations have an outreach department, which if you've got an administrator at a college that can work with them, a lot of the time they've got some prepackaged workshops that they can offer for your students very easily. Seeing if I'm forgetting anybody. I think that's about it for the community partners. We've also been able to work with some internal partners like financial aid. So if you're not in the financial aid department, they're a really nice group to reach out to.
Yeah, and one thing we were kind of speaking about before was that your department, your position, it's almost like a hybrid in a way between administration and faculty. Although technically you might be on one side, I think it really helps to bridge that gap because at many of the institutions that I speak with, those two kind of segments completely operate on their own, and there's almost like a solid wall between them. There's no communication. So have you found that you have a lot of support from the faculty, and have they helped you out in any way?
I've been pretty lucky in that I've known a couple of the faculty members who work in the accounting departments and the business departments. We're also a pretty small school, so reaching out to folks is, you know, asking four or five folks out to coffee and you've got a whole department. But yeah, we've been pretty successful in that. And I think that, you know, in some ways just inviting faculty to some of these workshops has been really successful, inviting staff to some of the workshops as well. But once the faculty start buying in, if you can find a couple of faculty advocates who can invite some students or say, hey, you know, there's a financial literacy workshop on budgeting today, or there's a financial literacy workshop on repaying your student loans, you guys should really go. I think the students start showing up, they start really feeling like that's something that's important, and that can help a lot. The other really big motivator, and it might work even better than faculty, is peer-to-peer. One of our workshops is actually taught by students, so our Understanding Credit workshop is taught by peers. We've got a lot of peer-to-peer education going on, and that's really generated a lot of buzz and a lot of interest among students to come to workshops. So our Understanding Credit workshop is taught by students, and I train them at the beginning of every year to teach about 10 workshops a semester, all on the same topic, all on credit. But those students have really generated a lot of buzz for the program.
That's I love the whole peer-to-peer concept in specifically in financial literacy and financial education, because a lot of the topics tend to be almost like taboo, where you know, no one wants to speak about them, they don't feel comfortable talking about it. But from what I've heard, if you can introduce any kind of peer-to-peer element to your program, it really kind of starts to break those barriers down and open up the lines of communication. Have you found that?
I have, very much. You know, we've had some very popular programs. One is the Understanding Credit workshop. The other is we've created a system where students can come in and review their credit report for free with a fellow student, with a peer. And students have been very comfortable in doing that. I'm, of course, always on call and sometimes in the room observing. But I think there are two benefits. And one is that the students, I don't want to say think that the subject matter is cool, but, and I think that students like me very much, but I think they like each other a little more. So that's been really beneficial. And then, as you said, I think that it makes it something that feels more real, right? So if your peers are interested in this subject and telling you, you know, yeah, you do need to worry about your credit, this is on there for 7 years, I think that the students attending these workshops take it a little more seriously. It's not just them being spoken at by an adult, but it's them really getting that message from a peer.
That's an interesting concept, too. It's about just the general kind of frame of mind at an institution. So I know a lot of organizations where they base their entire financial literacy program around a one-week-long event. It's a huge event at their campus where everyone's making such a big deal about financial literacy. And, you know, my first thing that went through my mind is, you know, if this is so important to you, why do you just throw everything into 1 week? And, you know, how really effective is that? And the response that I got was great. It's very similar to kind of what I think the idea that you're presenting is that it kind of just changes everyone's mind frame at the institution. You know, people realize it's a very big deal because it's such a big event. So it has lasting effects. And, you know, as you go to kind of teach these important lessons, the students are more receptive to it because they know it's a big deal.
Yeah, one of the programs that we offer, I actually worked with Brockton High School and the FDIC to develop a kind of version for Champlain, but it's a game of life or a credit for life kind of larger simulation. So we'll get 100 students, or actually this past year we got 200 students to attend each semester. And students will come in and it's a simulation. So at the beginning of the simulation, students will tell us their major, and we'll give them an average starting salary based on that major. And then once they're in the simulation, they'll create a full budget. So we give them a budget sheet, and they attend about 17 different booths around the event. And they'll make decisions on where to live. They'll make decisions on what kind of car they want to buy. They'll make decisions on repaying their student loans. Pretty much anything you can think of, food, clothing, all the general financial decisions people will have to make once they graduate. And I think related to what you were saying, we get so many students. We've got about 600 in our incoming class, and about 300 of them attended last year between the two semesters this one event. And I think having such a critical mass of students who have attended a similar session, which they enjoyed, on financial literacy can really create a buzz in the community about it, because they've all got something they can talk about. It's not just 5 or 10 kids who are worried about their budget now. It's 300. And those students can talk to each other and say, okay, what are we going to do here when we're moving off campus? Oh, you went to that. I went to that event too. Let's really think about some of the decisions we want to make before we move off campus. And hey, look at that. This is what I'm hoping they think. There's a living off campus panel that the lead department's offering. So why don't I go get my requirement done and I'll go to that panel and we can prep for moving.
Now, I want to go back real quick to something that you said earlier. You were mentioning different departments kind of proactively reaching out to you about possibly getting involved or with support. And in my mind, you know, I have a marketing background, so I'm thinking, oh, yeah, well, that's the media coverage. People are talking about it, reaching out to you. Whether that was the case or not, you know, we don't really know for sure. But can you talk a little bit about the different departments that have reached out to you and how they've offered support or gotten involved?
Of course. So one of the first departments we reached out to was the financial aid department. So they help out by offering two workshops each semester on repaying your student loans. That's been really beneficial to me because, of course, it's a way to get that requirement done in a way that I think really is helpful to the students. And it's also helpful for financial aid in that they're getting access to students. So they're getting 50 to 60 students probably attending total, 25 or 30 at each event, each semester. And those financial aid counselors are meeting these students. And now they can do some more follow-up work. I think that it really helps financial aid become a little more personal, the more students that can meet the folks in that department face-to-face and realize that they're good people, that they've got some real expertise and can help you with repaying, they can help you with getting loans for the next year, I think that's been really beneficial to our financial aid department. So we've really enjoyed working together with them. They've also been able to help us out with that Game of Life event. So they volunteer there as well and reach 200 or 300 students a year in that vein as well. Who else have we reached out to? The alumni relations folks and the Office of Advancement have a newsletter that goes out every month or so. And whenever they're a little short or whatever they're looking to really, I think, reach out to parents, they've been in touch with us in putting out some information about what the college is doing for financial literacy. So I think working with alumni relations, working with the Office of Advancement can help a lot. I do make all of my workshops open to alumni because I think that just after graduation is a really nice point to get a lot of financial literacy work in. I think the students are really open to a lot of the information that we're offering once they've graduated.
Okay. So to kind of summarize, and this is really for all the schools that I speak to that say, mm-hmm. we don't have enough personnel, we don't have the higher level support, we have no budget, but we really want to do something for financial literacy. So to kind of summarize the key points here that we can draw from this
yeah.
to help them out, I would say, one, set up some kind of beta program. Even if you're only doing it with 50 to 100 students, doing it on a smaller scale is going to be easier on your time, on your resources. But make sure to measure before and after so you can show some type of progress
mm-hmm.
that you can use in press releases to generate that media coverage that you're going to need to get additional organizational support. So first with other departments, getting them involved for some collaboration.
Yep.
And you will find at least one passionate person in every department that's someone that's very passionate about the topic of financial literacy, I can pretty much guarantee you.
Yeah.
And then from there, find community partners that can help you. Obviously, if they can put together an event, come in and talk about something, it takes the work off your plate. And then, after a few semesters of this and you're able to generate a little bit of media coverage, show some positive results with your measurements, then take that to the higher level people at your institution to hopefully get that additional support so you can get more personnel, more resources, whatever you need to kind of build that beta program into a university-wide initiative. So is there anything you would add to that?
I think that's exactly right. I think that keeping it small at the beginning is going to be a definite key. And I think really targeting whatever type of workshops you do to the developmental space that the students are in. So if you can offer I know here in Burlington we've got some issues around housing and the housing market being small. So most third and fourth year students I know at University of Vermont and a lot at Champlain are looking to move off campus. So maybe working with residential life and saying, okay, let's offer a living off campus panel that's really applicable to the students' lives and can generate some buzz is something that's really helpful. I think that can help a lot. Some successful events at the beginning, even if they're small, to create that peer-to-peer buzz, I think is the best thing you can do to have more successful programs later, but really having a good kickoff and knowing what your learning outcomes are. So as long as you know what learning outcomes you're looking for, I think you can do those pre- and post-tests before and after your event and then generate that kind of report and that kind of media buzz that you're talking about.
Okay. So we're just about out of time. We have time for one more question. So what I want to ask is, obviously, we didn't get to cover everything we wanted to, but what's the one question that I should have asked you that I didn't?
Oh my. I'm not really sure. I don't know what the question would be, but I think the answer that I would like to advocate for is that although our college has a full-time employee in me to kind of create this robust program, I think that colleges, without getting rid of my own job, I think you can do this as a piece of somebody else's job too. It sometimes sounds very intimidating, and I think we've touched on finding some community partners. There are a lot of folks who have experience doing financial literacy presentations, and I think that by joining forces with those community partners rather than inventing your own workshops. You can have a lot of success very easily without adding too much to anybody's plate.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't know what the question would be there.
No, that was perfect, actually. I think that's very useful for other school administrators out there. So once again, Mike, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been very informative for me, and hopefully it has for everyone listening as well. And make sure to stay tuned to our blog section on our website where you can see new podcasts as they're published. And again, if you do have any ideas on future topics for podcasts, or you just have a question or comment for us, you can email us at pr@igrad.com. That's PR as in public relations at IGRAD.com. So thanks a lot, Mike.
Thank you. And if I may add, if anybody has any questions about our program, they should feel welcome to contact me. And I don't know if you're posting my contact information somewhere, but mfife@champlain.edu is my email address, and I'm happy to talk to people about financial literacy or what they're looking to develop.
And that's M-F-I-F-E. We also will be posting a transcript of this recording, so you can look it up there as well. So thanks again, Mike.
Well, thank you.
You've been listening to iGrad's College Admin Podcast. Visit us at www.igrad.com for more financial literacy and financial aid resources. And subscribe to us on iTunes for more interviews with college trendsetters.